This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated on it, either by its hosts or any guests, is to be construed as psychological, medical, or legal advice. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Mike Tripiano, and this is Secret Sun, the podcast about searching identity and secrecy. Hi, everybody. First off, let's get some business out of the way. Thanks to all of you who are doing this, but please like, subscribe, and review the show. Many thanks to you who are doing that. As for Patreon, we have three new subscribers, so pop the champagne, pop the corks. From the acorn grows the mighty oak. I might mention their names. I'm not sure if I can do that. I wonder if I have to check any lawyers out there. Please contact me. Let me know. But I might just check with them if I can mention their names. There was a time in my life I thought I was Cuban. It was the early 90s. Miami Sound Machine was huge. And their lead singer, Gloria Estefan, from Cuba, was starting a solo career. So she was everywhere. And her album, Mi Tierra, was just everywhere. You could not get away from it. I remember twice on 60 Minutes, the huge Sunday evening show, they talked about Mi Tierra twice. After a while, I get a little more politically savvy and I realize, oh, this might have something to do with Castro, and wasn't that good of an album to be reviewed twice on 60 Minutes. I mean, why? Anyway, at this time in my life, I was doing a lot of research, and somehow, maybe through my adoptive parents, I got in my head that I was Cuban, or my father was Cuban. And I did a lot of research, pretty much pre-internet. So it was a lot of, God almighty, what was it? It was newspapers, it was microfiche, I don't even remember. We determined I was not Cuban. It says on my original birth certificate, my father was Sicilian. Turns out that's true. He was born there. But it was exciting for a week to think I was Cuban. I thought, wow, maybe I'm not Italian. How interesting to be Cuban. And I would go to these Cuban restaurants in Chicago where I was living and thinking, yeah, this feels right. This really feels right. And I'm liking this album. I think I was liking the album. At the time, I told myself, yeah, I really like this Mi Tierra by Gloria Estefan. Really, I remember one song. I think that was the eponymous song, Mi Tierra, which was always on the radio. So I'm eating Cuban food, went to see some Latin jazz bands. And after a week, found out, it doesn't seem like I'm Cuban. I wish I could tell you the specific details of the discovery, but I don't really remember them. I just remember finding out, I'm not Cuban. And that was that. And then it was back to the wondering and the wandering. My guest today, Sean Sigler, has written a book. I'll give you all the details in the show notes, and I'll mention the title at the end. I don't want to give it away. I want everything to be a surprise today. He has a great story. He's a warrior and a very nice guy. So here's Sean. You're a Midwesterner.
I am. I was born in Indiana.
Yeah. St. Louis here.
Very good. Love St. Louis with the blues and the river.
So you're adopted.
My parents always said that there was a whole field full of babies and they picked me.
You knew from a young age.
I don't remember not knowing. So it was just part of growing up. If I didn't know and I looked so different from the rest of the family, other people would have told me as soon as I started school and meeting new people.
And where'd you grow up?
Little town called Alexandria, Indiana.
2,000 people.
5,000 now.
So you saw a lot of cultural mirroring.
No. Okay. If you mean mirroring seeing people that look like me, no. It's all very white in high school. Maybe one person a few grades ahead of me was biracial, but that was it.
Did you suspect you had a different race than what you were growing up in?
People were calling me the N-word. They were making fun of my hair when I started school. People would ask all the time, are you black? And so that was my suspicion. I went to my mom and asked her over and over again, and she said no. I was also very sickly as a child, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital. She said they gave you a medication and that made your skin turn darker and your hair curl. Before that, you were lighter. Your hair was straight.
They said this happened after you were adopted.
Right. So I would go in and out of the hospital. So that was what mom always said had created my ethnic appearance.
You grew up in the 70s.
I was born in 63. I have a brother who's 2.5 years older than me. He's also adopted. And then there's a younger brother who's almost exactly 3 years younger than me. He's the biological.
What did you think you were? Did you think you were Puerto Rican? Did you think you were?
The wide spectrum. I could never forget that I was adopted. If I moved away to another city, I mean, would people ask you if you're adopted? No. They don't ask me if I'm adopted, but they ask me what my race is. And I've had everything. Are you Jewish? Are you Black? Are you Turkish? Are you Hispanic? Are you Asian? And then I have to say, no, I don't know. I'm adopted. And then they tell me what they think I am or who they think I look like. That's happened thousands of times in my life.
Even when you were a kid?
I was in a Catholic school up until eighth grade. And in that Catholic school, we went to church there and everybody knew the family. So they kind of knew the family's history. But when I started high school, I transferred to public school where I didn't know most of the people. So that's when it really started, people asking me. And of course, when I went to college, I knew almost no one. It got even worse in college, people asking what race, and they want me to check the boxes when I'm filling out applications. I mean, what race are you? I don't know.
They gave you this hospital explanation. So you got that from a young age. Did you believe in it first? And then over time, you thought, this is nonsense.
I believed it until I was in probably my late 20s. I was engaged to a Black woman. When we first met, I had lived at Myrtle Beach for 6 months doing eye exams on tourists that waded out in the ocean and lost their glasses. I became very dark and I let my hair grow long and I had a nice afro. Being from Indiana, I was light sensitive and I didn't like wearing the sunglasses out on the beach. So I had these amber colored contacts that kind of dulled the brightness and I could substitute my sunglasses for that and I could go in the water and I wouldn't have to worry about losing them. So with more tan, more hair and hazel colored eyes, she thought I was Black. Eventually, I moved inland, and that's where we met in Colombia. I was not in the sun at all. I quit wearing the amber contacts at one point, and then she really needed to know what my race was. It's like, I thought you were Black. You don't look as Black now as you did 2 months ago. I went home with a mission to ask my mom to see my adoption papers. Mom had never, ever showed me anything. I sat down. I said, well, I'm asking because this girl I'm seeing is Black and she wants to know if I'm Black too to continue this relationship. Mom came out and brought out part of my adoption papers. And it did show that my mother was 23 years old and white, but the father's side was listed as unknown. And I said, how do you know that my father was white if this is all you have to go on? She said, well, the lawyer that was handling the adoption said you'd be smart. She said, your mother was a rocket scientist and your father was a brain surgeon. How does that mean that my father's not Black? And she said, well, there's no Black brain surgeon. So I went back and told the girlfriend that and she just mocked it and laughed and said, that's not true. That was the first time I really thought, okay, maybe this whole story is fake. And I don't know whether they made that up to protect me from the other people in the family. My father's father was in the Klan. Dad told me when Dad was little, like 8 years old, he would go to Klan meetings with my grandfather. And my uncles and some of my first cousins were also members of the Klan.
So your parents, they must have known. Were they totally surprised when you started getting curly hair? Or
I think when I was adopted, they wouldn't have known. I would have passed for white. So I can see where they would be confused and I was sickly and they were more concentrated on that. And it wasn't until they noticed the hair and boy, he does get dark in the sun.
Well, I love the idea of the 23-year-old rocket scientist.
That was just something that she made up.
So when you're growing up, grade school and high school, you're hearing the N-word.
Yes.
It's such a big part of your secrecy is the racial component. Say you went to a store and they had magazines. Would you secretly look at Jet? Or something like that. You know what I mean?
No, I was.
No, I did that. Okay. I had to sneak and do that. Okay.
I was in such a racist environment. I had such a negative impression of Black people. No. I got to college and I was a little racist. And this is the way I was growing up. At IU, there was a big movement to protest the university's involvement in the government of South Africa. I felt drawn to that. I would go walk through the shanty town and listen to the speakers. But I thought, I don't know that I belong here. I don't know where I belong anyway. I feel like I should be here, but I don't.
So you make it through a couple of years.
The spring break of my freshman year, I happened to be on the bus, and my German associate professor was on the same bus. And we were talking German, and he said, "Are you German?" I said, "I don't know what I am." We started talking about the adoption, and he says, "You're so good at speaking German, and you seem so natural at it." He said, "Maybe you should go to Germany and see if you feel a connection there." And that sounded like a really good idea to 19-year-old me. That's how I ended up in Berlin. I was really just fleeing. I was so confused about my identity. I was getting no answers from my parents. So I just thought, well, I'm going to go search for myself. Maybe I am German.
Wow. Oh, God. That's what I thought before I moved here. Because I have German heritage, I found out. But you find out how American you are, man.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Once you move to the foreign country.
Yeah, but looking the way I did, American wasn't the first guess. They thought I was Turkish. Our group was matched with a group of Finnish students. We studied together and took classes. And then we took tours, and just walking tours through one of the plazas. There was a group of skateboarding punks in the black leather and spikes and the mohawks. One of the ugly Americans made a rude comment to them in English. They heard it and they were honest. The whole group of them took on the whole group of Americans and were beating the tar out of them. And one of them came for me and he stopped. He said, "Bist du Türke? Are you Turkish?" I thought, okay, now how am I going to explain this in German, how I'm adopted and I don't know? I had to think fast and I said, yes. And then he just gave me a thumbs up and he went and beat on some of the other Americans. So I thought, okay, maybe I'm Turkish.
Now you think you're Turkish. Do you go to Istanbul?
No. I decided to take a tour of Switzerland, arranged for a bus tour. And it was a full pack. I was the only one traveling alone. So I sat up front and the tour guide sat next to me. And she was the wife of an American soldier. So she was American. And of course, she asked me, "Are you black?" I thought, okay, she's American. I can explain the situation. And she was the first person that really explained to me why she thought I was black, because they had a biracial son. And she says, "I can tell by your ears that you're biracial. I can tell by your hair. I can tell by your eyes." So when my parents picked me up from O'Hare, I was asking my mom again. I said, "This woman went into great detail. She really thinks that I'm black." She said, "Absolutely not." And she just repeated the story, you know, rocket scientist and brain surgeon.
All right. So you finished school. You don't think you're Turkish anymore.
I said, "I want to get out of here." So then I picked out the farthest clinics that I could go to finish my education. And one was in Florida. One was outside of Baltimore. And then the other one was in Nuremberg. I spent a semester in Nuremberg, a semester in Florida, and a semester in Baltimore. Still running away from myself, trying to get somewhere where nobody would question me.
Oh my God. You gave Germany a second chance.
I gave Germany a second chance. And I thought, okay, this is different. You know, I've got my little doctor credentials. Still kind of thought I was German.
There was a week I thought I was Cuban. Miami Sound Machine were big. You go to Nuremberg. What do you think you are at this point?
Still searching. Probably think that I'm most likely a mix of black or Middle Eastern somehow. There's that whole adoption feeling. I kept looking for something. I didn't know how to find it.
And this whole time, you're still buying the line about the hospital and...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. When I graduated college, I really had no reason to think Mom was making that up.
You are between worlds, or you were.
Very much between worlds.
When did the searching finally happen?
This is 1992. I really wasn't aware of how to search.
How did you do it?
I moved back to Indiana in 1993. I got married in 98. And at some point, we had one miscarriage. And my wife and I discussed, maybe this is God's way of telling us you should adopt. And in particular, we decided that we wanted to adopt biracial kids. Because even though I still didn't know what race I was, I knew what hell I went through trying to figure out what race I was. We thought, there's other kids that are out there because parents still don't want the black one. We did that, and we were very open with it. It wasn't an open adoption. It was kind of semi-open where we could exchange letters and photos anonymously through the adoption agency. At some point, my daughter doesn't want me to share her story. At some point, she saw her biological mother on television, and she really wanted to meet her when she was about 12. I thought, sure, we will arrange that meeting. We arranged that meeting, and I saw how happy my daughter was, but I also saw how happy the birth mother was. I never really considered it from the birth mother's point of view. She was so pleased to see the child she gave up for adoption was doing well and was very happy for her. And I thought, maybe I should contact my birth mother. You know, I'm 53 years old at this point. I've resolved to live without finding, and I've already done it. I thought, well, maybe I should find it for her. And she did give me life. So I owe it to her to let her know how well I turned out. You know, the best revenge is a life well lived, right? I asked my mom again, adoptive mom, can I see my adoption papers? She brought out the whole thing, and my mother's name was on there. My wife snapped pictures of it real quick. My wife searched, and she found her within a few days. She hadn't moved very far. She was 15 miles down the road. She was living with the same woman that she'd been living with for years. We looked. I said, okay, we found her, but now what do we do? I don't want to interrupt her family. If I'm a secret, and I'm pretty sure I am, I don't want to barge in on her family. If she's happily married and didn't tell her husband, if she has other kids, I just don't want to be an intrusion. She might not even realize that I survived because I was so sick when I was born. So we did a search, and we found no aliases, no change of names, no husband, no picture of kids. After about a month of searching, we said, I'm it. I'm the only child she had. That really motivated me to tell her that I was okay. So I wrote her a long letter. On my letter, business letterhead, I said, I'm not scamming you. This is who I am. You can contact me any day of the week. And told her, you know, this is where I was born. This is the date I was born. Just wanted to let you know. I think you're my biological mother. I hold no ill will. I just want to let you know I'm happy and healthy and appreciate you giving me life. And said, if you want to contact me, here's my cell phone number. And she called right away. When I met her, she was living with the same woman. The reason why she didn't ever marry or have kids is that she was in a committed relationship with this other woman. In fact, that other woman drove her to the hospital when I was born. So they both were anxious to see me again.
Wait a minute. She was living with her partner?
Yes.
A woman. Okay.
Right. At the time I was born, she was not.
I see. Okay.
But they were friends. She had her teaching degree, and she was working at a mental health facility in southern Indiana, and that's where she met my father. So when she became pregnant, she knew that her family was very racist. When she was in high school, she had taken a church group through the South, through Mississippi and Alabama, and one of the girls in that group was darker complected. She wasn't of African heritage, but she was dark enough they were afraid of what to do with her. Where is she going to go to the bathroom? What diners can she eat in? And the girls just surrounded her. She was never left alone. And that made a very powerful impact on her. So she said, if I had you, I didn't know where you would go to the bathroom if we were out. So she was afraid to tell her parents. They would have, they disowned her over her relationship with another woman. They certainly wouldn't have liked me. At that time, being pregnant in Indiana, you could not be a teacher. There were no pregnant teachers. It was against the rules. And she thought, if I have this black son, they may never give me a job. I don't know where I would be working. As soon as they find out, I'd be fired. So that was her secret. My father was married. He was not a brain surgeon.
So she told you his name?
After... because he was married at the time with three kids and one on the way, and she'd followed who he was. But she says, I want to respect his privacy and the family's privacy. So she didn't tell me. We visited several times over the next few months. Finally, she said, I have something to give you. I've met you, and you are a person of extraordinary character. I'm going to trust you to do the right thing. And she gave me my father's obituary. And that's the first time in my life that I saw who I look like. Oh, that's me. I'm very much a copy of my father.
So what is that like when you finally see? I know what that's like. A lot of people don't.
People asking you, are you related to this person, that person? No, I don't know who I'm related to.
Yeah, but when you see your dad's picture for the first time.
Yeah, It was amazing. And he wore a little flat hat and some glasses in this obituary picture. And I had a little flat hat just like that in college. And I had glasses just like that in college. I thought, oh my gosh. And I showed it to a few people, no one in my adoptive family, but I sent it to a few friends and go, that's it. That's who you look like. Now I know who he is. So my wife goes on the internet search again.
You're 53 and you find out, like I was 50, almost 51. And I always think of that movie Waiting to Exhale. I feel like I sat here and exhaled and just stared out the window for like a couple days. How do you feel different?
Well, I guess people say it's like coming out of the fog. Just a huge relief. This is who I am. At that point, I had done 23andMe a few months before that, about the same time that I had met with my birth mother. That was definitive proof. I knew I had Mongolian spots from when we adopted the first child. The nurse was explaining them to him, and it's like, oh, I have those. That was my first clue. I was mixed race. And then 23andMe confirmed it with their little printout. So I was ready for that. But just knowing who I look like, that was huge.
You find out he's black first from your mom, right?
Right.
And how are you with that? You're like, I knew it.
I'm fine with that. I tried to identify as black in South Carolina. When I moved back to Indiana, I opened up a practice in the center of town. Well, it was close to the major bus station, and I took Medicaid, and I really served the underserved. I was still trying to identify as black there for my first few years in Indiana because my girlfriend gave me that identity, and I never had an identity before, and I didn't want to let that go. I started having lunch at a black lunch counter, and the owner there was a minister, and he wanted me to come to his church and do vision screenings. So I did vision screenings at his church, and then the next black church asked me, and the next black church asked me, and the president of the Urban League invited me. I felt part of it. I felt I had an identity. Finding out that my father was black was not a shock to me. I had tried it. It was just more of a validation. It's all through the obituary that one of my brothers had died. I had three brothers and one sister, three brothers older, one sister younger. I looked at that obituary and saw that I had two brothers that had died. They died at the age of 50, and I'm 54 at this point. So I thought, I've got to know what my medical history is. That's another delight of being adopted. You have no idea. And I had all these birth defects. I have a heart problem. They said, if you had a family history, we would probably do surgery, but we don't know what your family history is. So we're just going to go until it gets worse. So I thought, okay, I've got to know what my family history is, but I don't want my brother and sister to know that their father had an affair because he stayed married his whole life. They died within a few months of each other. So my secret was kept. I'm sure they didn't know. So I went back to 23andMe and I thought, I'll message one of my cousins and ask her. So I messaged through 23andMe and she told me everything I wanted to know. And I said, and I don't want my brother and sister to know that their father had an affair. And she said, too late. I've already told them. I mean, just in those minutes. Then my brother got on the line. He lives just about 5 miles from where my office is. And it's just amazing how close we are because he was from Southern Indiana. I was from Northern Indiana. And here we are. We are so similar. It is so nice to have someone that you know you're so close to, even though we weren't raised together. And my sister lives nearby, too. And I've met with her.
What do you think of this thing that we're so complicit in our own secrecy? It's like, well, they have a secret. I don't want to, like, I feel it with my paternal situation. Well, they have a secret. They're telling me to be a secret. Like I hear you say it and I think, well, who cares about their secrecy?
Yeah, it's very similar. I am a very empathetic person. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Even when I'm doing an eye exam and I say, you need a bifocal now, that's a tough statement for people. You're getting older. I just put other people's feelings ahead of my own. Maybe that was because I was adopted and raised with a family where I didn't fit in. And I always had to consider them first. I had to consider what my biological brother was going through in high school, trying to measure up to my academic success. Not saying things and putting other people first is just natural. It's in my nature now. It's not that common, is it? No. There's a lot of people that are me first, no. And I'm always other people first.
That's true.
She had one brother. He was part of the secret. He didn't know. And she goes, he comes over if you want to meet him. And he never wanted to meet me. So she was right. If she would have kept me, she would have been disowned.
Yeah, maybe he was in the Klan also.
My race is held a secret for 53 years. The answer was in an envelope in my parents' bedroom the whole time. I go to a therapist and tell them, you know, what's bothering me. And then they start guessing at my race. Like, you're not helping. This is what I think you are. Okay, great.
I don't think I can write a book.
Well, if you get 2 months of free time when you can't do anything else, there you go. That's the time to write it.
We probably just watch The Sopranos again.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Sean contacted me about telling his story. And I said, sure, if you have a story about searching, identity, and secrecy, and how those three things interconnect and affect each other, tell your story. And he wrote me a long email with a lot of details about his story. I read maybe two sentences because I wanted to be surprised. He said it was about secrecy and identity, and it sure was. And if anybody out there listening wants to tell their tale, send me an email at secretsunpod@gmail.com. Sean's book is called Born Without a Race. Check that out. And honestly, after I listened to Sean, I gave Miami Sound Machine and Gloria Estefan's Mi Tierra another chance, and it really didn't do it for me. I guess I'm not Cuban enough. I don't know, but it didn't do it for me. Thanks for listening. See you next time.